You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I know it might feel like it, but believe it or not, the Chicago Bears season isn't over after Sunday's loss to the Saints. Welcome into the Locked On Bears podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Cox, and I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. Today we're going back through what was a difficult game to watch, but we're going to start with some of the positives that we can take away and try and remind ourselves that it isn't all doom and gloom at this point, and then we'll turn our attention to some of the struggles and some of the remaining issues that most presently need to be addressed moving forward. As bad as the game felt, it really could have been a lot worse, right? The Bears were lucky early on to be able to keep it quite as close as they did throughout the first half. You may remember the Bears actually took the lead in the second quarter of this game, and there were other positives we can take away. Now, they may have been some of the positives that we've been taking away from the first stretch of games repeatedly here, but for example, Allen Robinson continues to play like a great number one wide receiver, a guy who continues to win all over the field, obviously the favorite go-to target of Mitchell Trubisky, perhaps to a detriment and too much of a focus toward Allen Robinson, but that is not in any way, shape, or form Allen Robinson's fault, and a lot of his early production was the reason the Bears were able to get some offensive success in the first half, to be able to drive down and get that field goal in the second quarter to take the lead, because Allen Robinson was catching everything thrown his way and being able to make some plays after the catch. So, you know, we got to see some offensive success at limited moments, and certainly in the fourth quarter, you know, in the garbage time, Allen Robinson was again being fed those targets and making plays up and down the field. But of course, you also have the Cordarrelle Patterson kickoff return, a huge boost for this offense to end the shutout, keep this team alive, get the game back in control, get the fans back in the game. And it did provide a boost to this team that got them going, was able to string together a little bit of momentum and keep things rolling in that first half and keep this team only down two at halftime. So we saw some good from Cordarrelle Patterson that we've been waiting to see him really finish one of those big returns, and we finally got to see it, and there's some hope for even more explosive playability from him farther down the line. And how about the replacement at right guard? Rashad Coward making his first career start, the converted defensive lineman filling in for Kyle Long, and really, I thought, playing about as well as you could have expected. You know, of everything that did go wrong in this game, he was not one of the names that you kept coming back to of being like, oh, Rashad Coward again, or the right guard again getting beat here. You could easily expect a young, raw player at his position to have more trouble in a game like this and feel like he could have been a vulnerability for the New Orleans Saints to attack. And not that the offensive line as a whole was great, but Rashad Coward individually was not a guy that kept being a problem. Like, if you start to power rank the biggest problems for the Bears in this game, Rashad Coward held his own. And for filling in that spot against this team in this situation with a lot of things going wrong around him, I thought Rashad Coward absolutely did a commendable job in his first action at right guard. Certainly room for improvement in there, but as good as you could have expected given the circumstances. And so I think it is important to kind of remember with this whole game that it was against the New Orleans Saints. And even though it's a New Orleans Saints team without Drew Brees and without Alvin Kamara, it is still a very good football team that the Chicago Bears lost to, and that the Chicago Bears were close to for at least the first half and got back a little bit more in the fourth quarter, even though it was garbage time. Things certainly fell apart. Do not get me wrong there. But the New Orleans Saints are now 6-1 and looking like one of the best Super Bowl contending teams in the NFL. So it's not like the Bears came out of the bye week and lost to, say, the Miami Dolphins with Brock Osweiler at quarterback like they did last year in a game that the Bears had no business losing, had no business playing as poorly as they did, and No business letting that go to overtime and then blowing it again in overtime. So as bad as a lot of Bears fans feel after this loss to the New Orleans Saints, I can't help but feel like the losing to Brock Osweiler last year, it seems objectively worse. That feeling it now, there's some recency bias that the Saints game just happened and it sucked to watch, and the Bears seem to be bad all over the field. But I'll tell you what, in that Dolphins game last year, they were really bad all over the field and getting beaten by Brock Osweiler, who just retired because he didn't really want to play anymore and wasn't really finding a lot of great jobs. Whereas Teddy Bridgewater, even though he's a backup quarterback, he's going to be a starting quarterback next year, and he's going to get signed, I think, to a pretty lucrative contract somewhere else. All of that is to say that the Chicago Bears are going to win more football games this season. They are still 3-3. They are still not even in last place in the NFC North. It's obviously going to be a challenging road, but this season is not over yet, and this team can still improve, and we've seen a lot of these same players play at a higher level before. So there is still hope for things to get better moving forward. This team's going to need something to pick them up and kind of get them back to the way they used to be able to perform. And if you find yourself wanting something similar, then good news. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. And because they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, it's not just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so you don't have to go to the doctor or wait at the pharmacy or deal with any of that awkwardness. Plus, they're made in the USA, and because Blue Chew prepares and ships directly, they're even cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for Locked On Bears listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code Locked On. All you pay is $5 for shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code Locked On to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Obviously, a lot of things went wrong for the Chicago Bears in the loss to the Saints, and it's not a game that you can specifically pin on any one individual player, coach, or even position group, because a lot of different players and coaches deserve a share of the blame, some more so than others, but the point being, this isn't as simple as Mitchell Trubisky lost the Bears the game, or Matt Nagy's play calling lost the Bears the game, or even the Bears defense lost the Bears the game. It was largely a collective failure, but it does seem like a lot of the talking point leaving the game and a lot of what Matt Nagy talked about after the game surfaced around this running game, because the team had a total of 7 attempts for 17 yards, and only 5 of those went to running backs for 16 of those 17 yards, which is obviously not ideal. And you don't want to have Mitchell Trubisky attempting 54 passes in a game where he wasn't playing particularly well either. And I think I was disappointed with Matt Nagy's response after the game in really having, I think, a lack of answers for why things went wrong on the running game, especially because he was expecting things to be better in that side of the ball. And I don't know, I don't feel like he very much had any good answers for what went wrong, including maybe not taking enough blame on his own shoulders.
Came out of the bye, very confident that you guys
Yeah. Some
answers. Anything specific you can like for us about what you felt was going to work better than it did today?
I really thought our run game would be better. You know, the attempts wise, I don't know our numbers as far as total plays in the first half, but the run game early on, just not a lot there. So then you go to throwing the ball a little bit, got a little bit going. The start of the third quarter, we had a fumble, and it's just one of those days. But it's for us, it's been one of those weeks, we need to pull together, and I'll be able to, here in a little bit, go back and watch the tape. and but I don't know what was the, I don't know, rushing yards was so low. I don't know, but you have to be 17 yards. You have to, you got to be able to run the ball.
Play selection, 23 passes, 5 runs.
Yeah.
Seeing from the Saints that made you go so pass heavy with the calls, or was it just
early on we weren't getting, again, we were 0-1-2 on our yards running the ball. It's really simple math. As a play caller, when it's 2nd and 9 and 2nd and 10 and 2nd and 8, and you're moving the ball, throwing it, you're getting first downs throwing it. That's what the objective is to get first down. So I don't care if I have to throw the ball 60 times a game. If that's what's going to help us win a game, or if I have to run it 60 times, I don't care. I want productive plays. It's not hard. And so that's probably why, that's probably where that went. And then you came out the second half and you want to be more balanced. You're right. As bad as all that was and everything that's going on, we came in the locker room, it's 12-10. As bad as that was, 12-10. Think about that, right? So now you come out in the third quarter, they go down, they score, and then we fumble first play. That's hard. That's hard. And then before you know it, now you're down 9 points, and then it's double digits, and now all of a sudden you have to throw the ball every down because time matters.
At any point, just as things were kind of going sideways the third quarter, did you think at all maybe about putting Chase in?
No, it never crossed my mind. It's because there's just so many parts of it, and Mitch he's a competitor. And I think for all of us, it just was, again, just one of those deals where you would really love it to be able to get the run game going early so that you can do more things. And we didn't do that. And if you don't get the run game going early, then then all of a sudden you're run, run, pass, and you're not getting it. And now it's the same thing. The run game has to get going. As simple as that. It just has to get going. You can't run for 17 yards in the NFL and think you're going to win a game.
Did anyone else cringe when Matt Nagy said, "I don't care if I have to throw the ball 60 times a game"? I mean, he did a good job of immediately following it by saying, "I don't care if I have to run the ball 60 times a game." But when he led with that, it was kind of like, you really hurt yourself with that quote there. That if someone took that out of context and didn't include the 60 runs a game part that immediately followed it, it sure wouldn't look bad. It sure wouldn't look good, because, boy, we haven't seen Matt Nagy come anywhere close to running it 60 times in a game. And we have seen him come pretty darn close to throwing it 60 times in a game. And I really felt like there was a certain lack of accountability on his own end there. And what he's really trying to do is, I think, accurately blame the run blocking and the running backs for not being successful in the run, but without outwardly blaming it. And he just keeps saying we have to be better. And when he says our first 3 runs went for, I believe, he said 0-1-2. I believe the actual order was 1-0-2 in their first 3 runs. The first play of the game to Tariq Cohen, and then, of course, the punt is blocked after the 3-and-out. Then the first play of the second drive was a run for 0 gains. And then the third play of that drive was a run for 2 gains, for 2 yards by David Montgomery. And when he's saying, if we run that poorly, then, he has to go to the pass, he is trying to say that his players aren't executing the runs that he called, which is sort of his way of saying it without directly throwing anybody under the bus. And I get what he's trying to do in that regard, but it kind of seemed like he was trying to justify having only called 7 running plays in the whole game, as though that were the right thing for him to do in this case. And I'm not saying that he needed to run the ball 60 times, but I don't know that there's any arguing that they should have tried to run the ball more. And it seemed like Matt wasn't necessarily admitting to that. And I don't know that I'd fully buy his explanation as far as, well, our first 3 runs went nowhere, so therefore, the smart thing to do was abandon it and pass the ball. He's right in the sense that you don't want to get stuck in the run-run-pass rhythm where you get 2 yards on first down and 2 yards on second down, and then you have to pass on 3rd and 6. I do get that. But I also think, as a play caller, you can go back through some of his drives in this game and kind of point to opportunities where they had the right down and distances to be able to run the ball in certain situations. And the passing game wasn't necessarily picking up the first downs that he kind of made it sound like he was. Like, I looked through the first quarter. They picked up one first down passing on the second drive, and then pass on second down, pass on third down, incomplete. The missed corner route to Taylor Gabriel, then they punted. Then, of course, they do hand it off to Anthony Miller for 1 yard, and he fumbles, so that disincentivizes you from passing the ball. But their first drive after the kickoff return touchdown, it was pass, 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 and to end the first quarter, and they pass on the first play of the second quarter, and then when they hand it off to Tariq Cohen to start the second quarter, he picks up 9 yards, and it was like their biggest run of the game, I believe. And then pass, 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 pass. There was a sack in there, so and that sack was a run-pass option, so there was an ability to run the ball there, and Trubisky didn't, which is, you know, there are some other dynamics here in terms of the fumbles make Matt Nagy want to go away from the passing game when you fumble twice, or go away from the running game when you fumble twice. Yeah, I get that. And then the run-pass option that turned into a sack that really should have either been a handoff or a quick throwaway, but Trubisky really kind of individually botched that one. So I get it in that sense. But even, you know, when the Bears get the ball back in the second quarter with 6.5 minutes left, pass, 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 three and out, including one of those passes, two of those passes, second and two and third and two, both passes. When those are opportunities where you could look at the Bears being able to run the ball. And even as you get down into the two-minute drill, they first play there, second and or 2 minutes and 17 seconds, pass, 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 punt. And then they get the ball back at the end, pass, 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 and then punt that was returned for a touchdown and nullified back. So there were more opportunities for Matt Nagy to run the ball in that first half. There's no denying that. But even when you look based on his explanation, as far as runs weren't working and we couldn't get stuck, pat, run, run, pass, they had a couple of short yardage situations they could have run the ball. When they did run the ball, they did get that 9 yard gain from Tariq Cohen. There were opportunities there. And I do get that the fumbles were a factor in that. So I don't totally hold the whole thing against him. But when you have what the Bears made a 2-point game in the first quarter, then took the lead in the second quarter, and it was only a 2-point game going into halftime. When you're within one possession and even having the lead at times in the first half, it's okay to run the ball. I know he says the goal is to get first downs, and it absolutely is. You want to get first downs and you want to get points, but you can also sort of play the time of possession game a little bit in there, play the long game a little bit, and not that you're ever trying to not pick up first downs, but you can afford to run the ball and take, I don't know if you want to call it taking risks in that regard, of maybe having worse down and distance situations to be able to stick with that run, to take some of the pressure off of Mitchell Trubisky and to leave your guys in a better position to not let the defense guess what you're doing and to be able to just throw a more balanced offensive attack so you're not just relying on Allen Robinson to convert all your first downs. Then in the second half, the defense became the problem. We'll turn our attention to that side of the ball and wrap up with something positive to take away this week next on Locked On Bears. Something about this game felt like a very familiar formula for the Bears' defensive shortcomings in the second half, right? Because for the most part, in the first half, they did their job. They were pretty close to the very good Bears defense that we've come to know. Like, of course, first drive, blocked punt, safety, 2 points on the board, not the Bears' defense's fault. And then as that first quarter goes on, Anthony Miller fumbles on the Bears' 26-yard line. The Saints take over just outside of the red zone. And what, five plays later, it's a touchdown to the tight end Hill. And I don't know, you know, when the Saints start with the ball at the 24, it's hard for me to put too much on the Bears' defense there. I mean, you'd like to see them hold them to a field goal instead of a touchdown. But that's points off a turnover that I'm willing to sort of give the Bears defense not a complete pass on, but it wasn't like the Saints drove 75 yards in 10 plays and just ate them up down the field. It really was, you know, a nice little pass to Michael Thomas, put him close, and then Hill was a little bit too open on the touchdown. But regardless, it's 9 points, and it's not ideal, but I don't put too much of that on the Bears defense. And then even into the second quarter, right, the Bears do give up one, you know, the defense gave up one full scoring drive there in the second quarter. 12 plays, 52 yards, ended with a 39-yard Will Lutz field goal. Those are 3 points I'm putting on the Bears defense. It happens sometimes. It took a lot for the Saints to be able to get downfield there. and ultimately held up strong in the red zone like we had kind of come to expect from this Bears defense. So for me, that was the 12 points in the first half, and it felt like a pretty fine Bears defense performance, because I'm not putting most of those 12 points, I'm not putting them on them. I put at least six. How about that? Six of those 12 points, because you split the difference on the touchdown, plus you give the 2 points to the safety away from him. So six of those 12 points, hypothetically, we're putting on the Bears defense. That's okay. That's an okay Bears defensive performance. It could have been worse with that punt return touchdown that was nullified, but even that wouldn't have been on the Bears defense. So you leave the first half feeling like okay. It's only 2 points. The defense is doing all right, and if the Bears offense can just get some things going, you know, maybe there's something possible here. Then the second half, things get bad, and it got bad right away for the Bears defense, and this is one where I start to lose a reasonable expectation, because there was the big deep pass to Ted Ginn for about 45 yards where it was like a max protect shot play where Prince Amukamara was trailing and the safety help wasn't there. That was really Clinton Dix, who was supposed to be back up in that deep zone but had come way too far up and wasn't really ended up guarding anybody and left all that space that Prince Amukamara thought he was going to need to get over to or thought he was going to have help from. So big explosive play there, puts the Saints down to the 3-yard line. They run it in touchdown. Bad defensive drive, absolutely. That's where it started. And then from there, it's like the very first play after that, David Montgomery fumbles. So, of course, the Saints get the ball back and ultimately miss the field goal, and the Bears defense holds up on a 3-and-out with a missed 52-yard field goal. But then Bears offense goes 3-and-out again, and all of a sudden, the Bears have possessed the ball for like a total of 2.5 minutes of clock time in the first half of the third quarter, and the Bears defense really starts to get tired there, right? And with about eight and a half left in that quarter, Saints go 11 plays, 76 yards and a touchdown, and that's when the wheels start to come off, and it's 26-10. The Bears come back out again, another 3-and-out, and that's really the formula that we've seen for this Bears defense. They'll do okay, and then maybe they'll give up a big play here or there, but as soon as the offense starts going into these 3-and-out, turnover, 3-and-out, turnover type drives, and the defense gets no break, they get gassed, they lose that confidence, then opposing offenses start to roll over them, and you get the touchdown there from the Saints, and then they almost get another touchdown, but end up stalling out in the red zone, another drive for a field goal, and then another touchdown drive, and it's just, then the defense, like Prince Amukamara said after the game, they just kept getting punched in the mouth, and because the offense couldn't do anything to give them a break and give them any kind of confidence or momentum that things are going to turn around, the deficit just kept growing. So, you know, that seems to be the formula, because at least in the first half, you know, the Bears offense, they had some 3-and-outs and they had some turnovers, but they were able to get some drives mixed in there, and the turnovers wouldn't be long possessions afterwards, so it wasn't like the Bears were constantly getting drained. And at least when the Bears were abandoning the running game and getting some passing going, they were getting a few first downs in there. It's just enough to kind of take some clock time so that the time of possession wouldn't be so balanced. And, you know, the Bears had some of that stamina still in the first half, but by the third quarter, man, when you're not getting anything going your way, it's tough. Because, like, that's the thing. It's not any one guy defensively. Like it's hard to find any individual who had a really good game. And when you look and you see Khalil Mack struggling to affect the quarterback, you see your Pro Bowl safety, Eddie Jackson, not really doing a lot for you on the back end. You know, the guys that you know are consistent, good NFL players, and they're all struggling. To me, that's, you know, that tells you that there's something bigger affecting them from a stamina and an endurance standpoint, that it is a collective failure. It's not like one cornerback is getting burned all the way down the field and the Saints are just attacking in the same way. It's just like the running game is opening up, which means your defensive line isn't getting enough pressure and holding blocks long enough. Your linebackers aren't diagnosing and attacking downhill well enough to stop those plays, and guys are breaking through, and then the play action game is working, the passing game is working, and everything just falls apart for this Chicago Bears defense. That's not to put all the blame on the offense. The Bears defense deserves plenty of blame for their poor play, but it just seems like it is a familiar formula that you think back to, like, you know, the Eagles game last year when the Bears offense, in the playoffs, when the Bears offense kind of stalled in that second half and the defense started to get a little bit worn out. Or like the Giants game that went into overtime in the second half, the Chase Daniel offense kind of goes off the rails and the Giants get some points and take the lead, and eventually it goes into overtime and the defense gets tired. Or the Dolphins game after the bye last week, perfect example. You know, late in that game, the Bears are exhausted. They're just not able to keep their defense playing at a high level when their offense wasn't able to keep things going into the end of that fourth quarter. So there's just, it seems like the offense is or the defense is quite often tied to the offense in terms of time of possession, in terms of momentum and confidence in how close a game is. And when the Bears offense is firing well, the Bears defense is firing well. But when they aren't getting much help from Mitchell Trubisky and company, that's when the problems sort of start to compound on themselves. And so the Bears are left not, or trying not to let this loss and the last two losses compound on themselves. And I wanted to end on something Matt Nagy said about trying to avoid the negativity and trying to stay positive after another loss, and how the culture in the locker room is supposed to help them do that.
You know, none of this is because guys don't care. Our quarterback cares. Our players care. They're, you know, so one thing, as negative Nelly as this will be at 3-3 for us right now, right? I get it. And I'm the one that's going to have to answer to y'all all the time about the negativity of everything that's going on. Got it. We get it, but we need to stay together. We're not going to let anybody around here pull us apart. I promise you that. So we will come together with answers. And, as every week goes by, we do need to know that time is of the essence. But being 3-3, here's what I'll tell them. You ready? I'll just tell you. I talk about the horse blinders and the earmuffs. Don't listen to anything outside, because right now it's not going to be good, you know? So what happens is people from outside try to pull you down. And the last thing that anybody's going to do, whether it's you guys or anybody else outside, it's, you're not pulling us down. So we're going to be positive, and we're going to fight through it, because that's what winning teams do, and that's what positive people and good people do.
It comes off as maybe a little bit of a desperate-sounding Matt Nagy, but it is a desperate team in a situation with their backs against the wall, and I get it. And I think the important takeaway here is that, as convenient as it might be to try and compare Matt Nagy and Mark Trestman as the offensive coaches whose offenses aren't producing at the level that the team should be, the difference is in that leadership and in that locker room. And Mark Trestman completely lost his locker room in his second season, and Matt Nagy is nowhere close to losing his locker room from everything we can tell on the outside, which I'll admit is not a lot. But we sure could tell on the outside when it was Mark Trestman, and we are not hearing any of those same things with Matt Nagy. It is a high-character team. It is a team that they're going to get frustrated. They're going to get mad at each other sometimes, and that's part of the process. But it seems like a team that isn't going to completely break apart, especially sitting at 3-3, especially with so much season ahead of them, and because they've already proven how good they can play. They're more frustrated at themselves than they are at each other. And I think Matt Nagy still has control of this locker room and can still kind of keep these guys together. And when they start playing teams that aren't as good as the New Orleans Saints, and when things start to turn around, like I said at the beginning, there are going to be more wins this season. The Los Angeles Chargers that they play next week are 2-4. It is a team the Chicago Bears should beat. They play a Philadelphia Eagles team after that that is struggling and trending down in a major way. And you know, as you look down the schedule, there are going to be more opportunities for this Bears team to win and to build some of this confidence back. So maybe they're not going to be exactly where they want to be, and they're not going to get there the way they want to get there. But I do not think this Bears season is over. I do think there are a lot brighter days still in front of us, and you can bet we're going to be right here to break it all down every week on the Locked On Bears podcast. Make sure you subscribe to keep up with all of our daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. And if you want to do us a favor, tell a fellow Chicago Bears fan about the podcast. It's a great way, I think, kind of pick you up a little bit after a tough weekend of Bears football, after having going a whole weekend without it the week before. I know it's been a tough couple of weeks here, even with Oakland before that. But like I said, I think better games and better days are in the near future. And in the meantime, I hope the Locked On Bears podcast helps you bear down.